from KMXT in Kodiak. This is the Alaska Fisheries Report. I'm Jay Barrett. Coming up this week, the Copper River sockeye forecast is looking good for this season. Trollers have some money coming to them, and we have an update on hatchery crab. All coming up on the Alaska Fisheries Report.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute, working to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. On the web at alaskaseafood.org.
Commercial fishermen can expect to net 1.18 million sockeye salmon and 9,200 Chinook this season in the Copper River fishery. That's according to the forecast just out from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. If the forecast holds true, it would represent considerable improvement over the lackluster 2010 season, at least with respect to sockeye. According to the season summary, Copper River gillnetters last year caught 635,968 reds and 9,654 kings. Commercial salmon trollers have until February 25th to apply for money meant to offset a drop in king salmon catches allowed under the Pacific Salmon Treaty. Anyone who held a hand or power troll permit in 2009 is eligible and has been sent a pre-printed application from the state's Commercial Fisheries Entry Commission. The Pacific Salmon Treaty is an agreement between the U.S. and Canada on the management of salmon. When it was renegotiated in 2008, Alaska's share of the harvest was reduced by 15%. About $1.5 million was set aside to compensate Alaska trollers for the loss. Howard Pendle has been power trolling for most of his 35 years as a fisherman. He's also on the northern panel that advises the Pacific Salmon Commission. He says the 15% reduction has impacts beyond the fish themselves.
That's the money they'd be spending around town. I bet if they have a little extra, you know, able to do something with, make donations, help get kids to college and whatever. But anyway, that's really out of the net. So the thought was to try to get some of that money just directly back into their pocket.
That money starts at $75 for anyone who held a hand troll permit in 2009. For power trollers, the payment begins at $150. From there, additional money is added on for those who actually commercially harvested a fish, and then again based on an individual's percentage of the total Chinook salmon harvest from 2009. Pendle says the money will help, but that he'd rather have the fish.
I don't think there's any way to compensate for the loss of fish. Then fishermen have never asked for, that I'm familiar with, asked for money, and they didn't ask for it this time. We really wanted the fish.
Applications must be received by February 25th. Farmers take note. State of Alaska is now accepting applications for aquatic farm sites in South Central and Southeast Alaska. Aquatic farm leases are issued for 10 years and are intended to allow farmers to develop the state's tideland and submerged lands into shellfish or sea plant farms. The site must meet a minimum production level in annual sales by the end of the fifth year of the lease and continue to hold at least that production level for each year thereafter to keep the lease. There are 15 sites available in South Central and 41 in Southeast. Farm site applications and information can be viewed or downloaded from the Department of Natural Resources website, dnr.alaska.gov. They'll be accepted through May 2nd.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is supported in part by ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company, and by the Pebble Partnership. Listening before we act. Find out more at pebblepartnership.com.
You're listening to the Alaska Fisheries Report. Hear the whole show online at kmxt.org. It's back to the drawing board for the Valdez Ports and Harbor Commission. It took two split votes for a resolution concerning facility fee hikes for the small boat harbor to fail during a recent city council meeting. KCHU's Tony Gorman reports.
Some of the increases recommended by the Ports and Harbor Commission included a 10% hike in the moorage rate over the next 3 years, a $3 increase in the upland storage winter months fee, and a $25 increase in the seasonal launch ramp fee. The proposed increases were projected to bring the city over $79,000 in revenue. Despite being the lowest among surrounding communities, the increases raised some concerns among the city council. Councilman Mike Wells felt there are other ways to generate revenue for the harbor.
I'd like to see us kind of maybe set some kind of goal instead of just continuing to raise rates to basically put the city in a position where any surplus that's generated just automatically would go into that.
Ports and Harbor Director Diane Kinney explained the commission's reasoning behind the increased schedule.
We're kind of slowly trying to get where we need to be, but not to impact the voters all at once with a big hit.
Wells also expressed concerns with increases in other small fees. He motioned to have a work session with the commission before voting on the resolution. Mayor Dave Cobb agreed, saying he didn't want Valdez to price itself out of the market.
We've already got competition, huge competition with Cordova on their big new travel lift and their fancy facility over there. We're going to start losing all of our, maybe not all of them, but a lot of our commercial vessels are going to go over there and haul out. I think we need to sit down with the Ports and Harbors Commission, have a discussion, and discuss these rates and discuss where we're going.
Cobb said he supported the increases but didn't agree with the number of fees affected within the year. Kinney also thought a work session wasn't a bad idea. She says some of the rates don't reflect the harbor's costs.
The cost of snow removal that the city shop does, Larry's guys remove the snow over there, that's a cost of the city. That's not really shown in the harbor's budget, but it is definitely a cost since there are other fees that some of the other departments are picking up for the harbor. So do we want to offset all the costs of the city? Do we want to just offset the harbor staff's costs? So that would certainly be a great discussion to have, what we want to try and recoup.
Other members like Councilwoman Karen Abels felt a postponement would undermine the commission.
We entrust them to do the best that they can do. They're the ones that are skilled at what they do on their commission. And some of these things might be a little bit out of line. I don't know. I'm not an expert in that. And so I'm going to trust you to make that assessment.
In the end, the motion to table the resolution failed on a 3-3 vote, with Abels and Councilman Alan Sorum and Steve McCann voting no. The resolution eventually failed by another split decision, with Mayor Cobb and council members Mike Wells and Dorothy Moore voting no. Councilman Joe Prax was not present for the vote. Reporting from Valdez, I'm Tony Gorman.
Scientists will conduct field experiments on juvenile red king crab this summer in Southeast. It's part of a larger study that could someday lead to a king crab hatchery program. Matt Lichtenstein spoke with one of the lead researchers and has this report.
The multi-year project was prompted by concern over depleted crab stocks around Kodiak and the Pribilof Islands. So a coalition of scientists, fishermen, fishery businesses, and Alaska Native groups formed the Alaska King Crab Research, Rehabilitation, and Biology Program. Jenny Eckert is Associate Professor of Fisheries for the University of Alaska Fairbanks. She's based in the School for Fisheries and Ocean Sciences in Juneau. She is one of the lead researchers who's raised larval crab to their first juvenile stage at the Aleutic Pride Shellfish Hatchery in Seward.
The hatchery project started in 2006. It was sort of a community-based sort of ground movement that there were people that were concerned that king crabs have declined and haven't recovered even in the absence of fishing. And so there are individuals that wanted to see if we could culture king crabs on a large scale.
Eckert says 2007 was their first culture year.
And we didn't have very good success that year. But in subsequent years, we've done quite well. So in 2008, we did better. In 2009 and 10, we were able to produce over 100,000 juvenile red king crab in both years.
This summer, they'll be conducting more field research on how juvenile crab deal with predation in the wild. The work will take place in Yankee Cove near Juneau. Like in the Pribilofs, fishery managers in Southeast Alaska have also closed red crab fishing for several years because of stock concerns. Eckert says one potential explanation for why depleted king crab stocks haven't recovered is that too many of the tiny juvenile crab are being eaten by predators.
A couple of years ago, we initiated a field project with cameras that we mounted underwater to record what predators came along and ate king crabs that were tethered. And the project went very well. It was logistically pretty challenging, but it went pretty well. So we'll be doing a follow-up to that to learn more about predation in the wild of these very small king crabs. These king crabs we'll be using will be on the order of 5 to 10 millimeters.
That's about the size of a pen cap or a small button. The researchers actually use a piece of monofilament to tie the crab in front of the camera. In previous studies, they found sculpin were the main predator. Eckert says they've been looking at things like the way habitat or the lack of habitat affects predation. They've also looked at the difference age makes on predation, how vulnerable a crab is that just hatched that year versus a crab that hatched the year before.
The age one crabs were more aggressive towards predators. They would fight. And the age zero crabs just hunkered down and tried to hide. So we saw interesting behavioral differences between crabs that were a year apart in age.
Meanwhile, researchers are also studying whether hatchery-reared red crabs can actually be conditioned to life in the wild by exposing them to predators in the lab.
And it's been shown for other crustaceans that when you expose them to predators, then either their behavior or their morphology changes. And in the case in this lab experiment, we've just started to do the preliminary analysis, but it indicates that, in fact, when you expose these small crabs to fish in a non-lethal way, and then later expose them to fish again, they have an increased survival rate by having been exposed to the fish predators.
Eckert believes there is a potential for hatchery enhancement of wild red king crab stocks, but at this point, the researchers still have a lot more work to do.
One of the important parts that this current study in this, the study we did 2 years ago and the study that we'll be doing again this summer, will be trying to figure out where are there bottlenecks in the life history of these crabs. If, in fact, the bottleneck is at the juvenile stage, then if we add more juveniles, that could then ultimately produce more adults for basically people to eat. But at this point, we don't know if that's going to happen yet. So we're still in the feasibility stage.
So Eckert says it would be a while before any large-scale enhancement could happen. Resource managers would have to look at a variety of policy concerns before allowing such a program to move forward. Eckert says there are many issues that need to be considered.
One of them has to do with genetics, and it's very important that we not disrupt the natural genetic variation that is out there. So that's we have several companion projects that are working on the genetics of both red and blue king crab to better understand the population structure and then to evaluate if a hatchery project was to proceed, how many crabs would be needed to not swamp the natural genetic variation with hatchery individuals.
Eckert says another concern is ownership. Would these hatchery-reared crab go to the general public domain? Would they be allocated between user groups? And how could you tell a hatchery crab from a wild crab?
So one of the companion projects that we're working on right now is how to tag crabs so that we can tell, just like with salmon, we can distinguish hatchery-raised salmon from wild salmon. And we'll hopefully be able to do that with crab, too.
But Eckert says there is still more work to do on that front as well. The AK Crab program has received over $300,000 in grant money from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and nearly $160,000 of in-kind and support services from the Aleutic Pride Hatchery, Alaska Fish and Game, the University, and Alaska Sea Grant. In Petersburg, I'm Matt Lichtenstein.
The Alaska Fisheries Report is brought to you in part by Alaska Boats and Permits, marine broker for vessels, permits, and IFQs. 1-800-992-4960 or online at alaskaboat.com.
And that's all for this edition of the Alaska Fisheries Report. We had help this week from Deck Boss blogger Wesley Loy in Anchorage, KCAW's Ed Ronco in Sitka, KCHU's Tony Gorman in Valdez, and KFSK's Matt Lichtenstein in Petersburg. From KMXT in Kodiak, I'm Jay Barrett.